Job 23, and we shall read verse 10. Job chapter 23 and verse 10. But he knoweth the way that I take. When he hath tried me, I shall come forth as gold. Now, the words leading up to this verse are of great importance for understanding exactly what Job is saying in verse 10. And he is, in these verses, emphasizing one of the difficult things in the Christian life. Difficult in one sense, yet in another, greatly beneficial. Something which the unbeliever really has no entry into at all. It is just a mystery to the unbeliever. And I'm speaking about the impenetrableness of the secret will of God. Now, we must be quite clear in our minds that God has revealed his will in the scriptures. Here is God's revealed will. He has made this clear to us, all that is in this book. But there is also his secret will. That is the way in which he rules our circumstances and plans our circumstances and dispenses all the various factors in our lives. This is God's secret will, and one of the things which make the Christian life difficult for us sometimes, or as we make it difficult for ourselves, that we get frustrated sometimes that we do not know the secret will of God. The believer does not really know what God is doing. Now, that becomes very clear in two of the verses here, in verses 8 and 9, where Job says, "Behold, I go forward, but he is not there, and backward, but I cannot perceive him. On the left hand, where he doth work, but I cannot behold him. He hideth himself on the right hand, that I cannot see him." He hideth himself. Now, this is especially difficult. This impenetrableness of the secret will of God is particularly difficult in a time of affliction. And that was exactly what Job was in at this time. He was going through a time of great affliction. You know yourselves the details of that affliction without me telling you. Now, the first thing that we have to make clear and come to terms with is that God does sometimes hide himself from the believer. God does sometimes hide himself from the believer, from his own child. He sometimes hides himself. That is what we have in the plea in verse 3. It reveals that that is just the way Job feels. He says, "Oh, that I knew where I might find him, that I might come even to his seat." Now, that's surely a common cry for the child of God when they are in trouble. "Oh, that I knew where I might find him." God hiding himself in Job's hour of greatest need, and very often with ourselves, it is just like that. He hides himself even in our time of greatest need. Now, this yearning is not necessarily a yearning to have a physical almost tangible face-to-face meeting with God. Although we might yearn for it, we know that we cannot have that. And it's a longing to come before Him in prayer in such a way that we meet with Him. In such a way that we feel that we have been with Him and that He has been with us. That we are aware of His presence and that we can even say, well, yes, I found Him. I went to prayer and I found Him. He was there and I found Him. But this problem of not being able to find the Lord, even in a time of trouble, it is not something abnormal. It is just the yearning that we have that we might know that we have found Him. It's very, very easy for Satan to persuade us that our condition and our spiritual symptoms, that they indicate some kind of spiritual pathology, some kind of spiritual disease. And especially when he can say to us, to use the words of the psalmist, that people were saying this to the psalmist, where now is thy God? When Satan says that to us, where is your God now? You are looking for Him. You are searching for Him. You are crying for Him. And you cannot find Him. It is not at all an abnormal thing. We may even have plans like Job had for such a meeting. And with that, as we read in Job verses 4 and 5, I would order my cause before Him and fill my mouth with arguments. I would know the words which He would answer me and understand what He would say unto me. He is just yearning for this kind of face-to-face meeting, this nearness to God, so that He could come into His presence, present His pleas, present His arguments, make out His case before Him, and hear what God Himself had to say. And He knows, He has this assurance. He says, I know the words which would answer me and understand what He would say to me. He knows it. Is that not enough? No, it's not enough. He wants to hear it. He wants to know that it's coming fresh from God Himself. Job knows enough about God not to fear His great power. Look at verse 6 there. Will He plead against me with His great power? No. He wouldn't use His great strength like that. But He says, He would put strength in me. He wouldn't use His power to do me harm. I know that. But He would use His power to strengthen me. Now in Job verse 7 there, we have kind of strange sort of verse in the context. There, the righteous might dispute with Him. So should I be delivered forever from my judge. What on earth is Job speaking about here? Yes, he's talking about high hopes, but that's an understatement. This is something which is once for all and forever. It is as if he is yearning for justification. Is that impossible for Job at such an early time in the history of redemption? Is it an impossibility that he would have the hope of final justification as we have? Well, it's not impossible at all, because the promise of a Saviour is given long before Job's time. It's given in Genesis chapter 3 verse 15 that the seed of the woman would bruise the serpent's head. And it just takes somebody spiritually minded to read that and have the hope that one day that Satan's head would be bruised by this seed of the woman, and that they would be justified, that they would be delivered forever from the judge, delivered forever, not from God as God, but as God as the wielder of judgment, as the one who would take vengeance upon them, that there would be deliverance forever from that. Now, that is God hiding himself. Now, secondly, what happens when Job seeks to find God? Every effort that he makes to find God draws a blank. That is so emphasized for us in verses 8 and 9. Going in this direction, in that direction, in the next direction, and still nothing. Now that drawing a blank in all directions, it is not accidental. It is not just that Job happens not to have found God. It's not that at all. It is the simple fact that God positively hides himself. He does. He covers himself from the sight and the perception of his own child. As it says here, no perceiving of his presence, no beholding him, no seeing him, because he quite simply hides himself. Emphasizing, this is not just what happens to happen in these circumstances in which Job is in. What happens on that particular day, at that particular moment. It's not that. It is just positively that God does hide himself. Now, if that was the bottom line, the bottom and final line, then the situation and the scenario would be quite simply grim. But that is not the way it is. And that brings us to the next point. This great fact that God, during this time of hiding himself, is not far from Job, but that he is near and deeply, deeply involved with him. Now we know the truth of that, because we know what is in Job chapters 1 and 2. Job himself doesn't know that, but we know it. And we know from that, that right at this moment, that God is very far from being aloof or far from Job, but that he is in fact deeply involved with him.
Verse
10, the words of our text, the key words there are, but he knoweth. That is of the very fabric and essence of faith. But he knoweth. Faith in God. Faith even penetrating the darkness of God hiding himself. Faith able to say, in spite of the fact that God is hiding himself, able to say, but he knoweth. Is there knowledge with the Almighty? Of course there is. Is there knowledge with him when he is hiding himself? Of course there is. But he knoweth, in contrast with my knowledge, he knows more, even more about my situation and my circumstances, even more than I know myself. But above all, he knows my trouble. He knows the path I am on. He knows the way that I take. He knows it all. He knows every twist and turn in this path. He knows the terrain which is to be crossed. He knows the hazards. He knows the stumblings. He knows the attacks. He knows the wounds. He knows the losses sustained. He knows the heartbreaks. And he knows all the stresses of it. He knoweth the way that I take. I can't see him. I can't find him. I can't make contact with him. But of this thing I am sure. He knoweth the way that I take. What is it? It is as if Job is saying, he knoweth, and I know that he knoweth. He knows my complaints. He knows my quarreling with his will. He knows my dissatisfaction. He knows my discontent. He knows my rebellion. He knows it all. All of it real. God knows it all. Now, to realize the extent of Job's discontent and the extent of his quarreling with God, we have to go back to Job chapter 3. And if you see Job there sliding into the abyss of faith, as far as it's human aspect is concerned, his faith melting away. But of course, saving faith is not just our believing and our faith. As we read in Ephesians 2:8, faith is the gift of God. It is God's work. That part of it can never disappear. It can never fail. The human aspect of it can fail. And that is what happened to Job in Job chapter 3. Saying things which he should not have been saying. Words which should not have crossed his mouth. But God knew it all. How could he possibly not know? Because it was all God's own doing. This path was not just Job's path. It was the path that Job was taking. But the path was God's. It was God who laid it out. God who planned it for him. Job doesn't say, he knows my path. He says, he knows the way that I take. He knows it because it is his doing. And when he hath tried me, I will come forth as gold. First of all, it was a path and a trial which were bound up with one another. The path was God's, and all the events in it were God's, and therefore all the calamities that came upon Job were all in that path, put there by God. Job does not know the full truth, as Job did not know the full truth, as we know it, because we have Job chapters 1 and 2, which explain to us what went on in the spiritual realm. But the important thing is, when we go and look at what happened there, we realize something very important, that the initiative that triggered Job's trial came not from Satan, but it came from God. The first word is from God concerning Job. He addresses Satan and he says to him, "Have you considered my servant Job?" It was God who brought up the name of Job. I mean, I find it very difficult when some of the most prominent expositors, the most able expositors, say that this trial was initiated by Satan. And that's not uncommon. But if you read what is there in Job chapters 1 and 2, you'll see that it was not Satan who initiated the trial. It was God. So this was all his, really. Satan did the evil to Job, but it was by God's permission. But although Job did not know what we know from Job chapters 1 and 2, nevertheless, he knew the basics. What are the basics? They are in these words: "When he hath tried me, I will come forth a scorn." So he knows the basics, which is that this path has been hard, this path that I take. He knows it, but more than that, it is a path which is going to bring me forth as gold. And that's the last point. The personal side of this triumph. And it is as if Job was saying this in defiance of these friends who were full of accusations against him. People who came to comfort him, and yet because he wouldn't bend to their way of thinking, they begin to turn against him and accuse him and accuse him and accuse him. At one point, saying to him that his sins were infinite, that he was a terribly wicked man. So, in defiance of Satan, in defiance of these so-called friends, Job was saying this to them: "When he hath tried me, I will come forth a scorn." Notice it's not when God has tried me, it will produce gold. Or by trial, God produces gold. It's not, it is tied up with the person of Job somehow or other. "When he has tried me, I will come forth as gold." That's the amazing thing. The personal triumph for Job, that he has confidence in, while still in the mess he was in, while still sitting on the manure heap, while still surrounded with these accusations, although they are coming to an end at this point. Nevertheless, he's just as if he knocks them all back with his great truth. "When he hath tried me, I will come forth as gold." I will emerge from this valley. Not as I went into it, but I will emerge from it different. I will emerge from it as somebody who has been changed by God. Somebody who has been in some measure sanctified through the trial. He went into it. A great man. One of the greatest men of the East. But he will come forth. Come out of it. He will come forth as gold. I will emerge from this valley. From this vale of tears. From this trial. I will emerge from it as gold. Can we weigh the one against the other? Can we put the weight of the trial in one balance and the gold in the other? What would happen? There would be no contest. Paul explains it. For he says, I am persuaded that the sufferings of this present time cannot be compared with the glory which shall be seen in us. God is doing a great work. In the valleys of this life, He is doing a great work. In ordinary Christians, in Christians whom the world treats as less than nothing, in them God is doing His great work, His greatest work. In preparing them for heaven, He is bringing forth gold. I shall come forth as gold. And Paul speaks of the glory that shall be seen in us. And we have to be careful. And God has built certain things into that experience, which saves us from many of the pitfalls. Because these are things that we have to take by faith, because He has seen to it that none of us can say or ever will say, I am growing in grace. I am getting better. I am becoming holier. I am more sanctified than I was. God has built in things which make that impossible. What we will tend to say is, woe is me. As Paul said, who shall deliver me from this body of death? When I would do good, evil is present with me. That section of Romans 7, how encouraging it is to the Christian who is rebuking and reproaching themselves because they don't feel progress. They don't feel they're getting holier. Perhaps they look at others and they think, oh, they're progressing. They're getting holier. But the fact of the matter is that these others will look in the same way at yourselves, at ourselves. Why does God do it that way? I say, to save us from the great pitfall, the greatest pitfall of all to a spiritual person. And that is the sin of pride. If He allowed it, we would make bad use of it. But we have to take it by faith. That we will come forth as gold. That these trials will produce gold. And that the weight of them will be nothing. They cannot be compared to the glory of what will come out of it. I will come forth as gold. The glory that shall be seen in us. We have to believe it by faith, because that is what the Word of God says. And that is the truth. That is what is really happening. Even although we feel just the way Paul felt in Romans 7. Oh, wretched man that I am. Who will deliver me from this body of death? So we have here, from the life of Job, in the detail of these words. And it is amazing how much there is in every detail of the verse. We have there encouragement. Encouragement to keep going. Encouragement to defy Satan, as Job does here. When Satan tries to get us down, when he wants to laugh at us, we say to him, Satan, just you listen. When he hath tried me, I will come forth as gold. And all that you can do to me in this present time cannot be compared to the glory which shall be seen in me when God has finished his work. Let us pray. Our gracious God, we thank thee for the glory of thy work. We thank thee, Lord, for the immeasurable worth of everything that thou art doing. We thank thee, Lord, that thou hast given us faith. Faith to believe these things. Faith with which you defy Satan. And we thank thee, Lord, that thou hast protected us from ourselves, that we might know